Good morning. Today's daf in getting Mem Aleph or Mem Amud Beis. We're making our way back to where we should be. In Yanim of Shechar Eved, we're talking about owning an Eved Kanani and how exactly to be Meshachrir. So we are obviously going to continue on that trend here throughout the fourth parak of the Masechta. We're just going to pick it up where we left off yesterday, Tanur Rabbanan. So you want to find us in the Gemara, one Mem Amud Beis, and it's about a third of the way down, even less, quarter of the way down. First words in the line, Tanur Rabbanan. Okay, so over here we're going to be having a funny debate between the owner and his Eved Kanani. Well, it's not really a debate, but it's a Tanur Rabbanan. Omer Asisi Ploni Avdi Ben Chorin. Alright, or alternatively, Asui Ben Chorin. Or alternatively, Harehu Ben Chorin. So in any one of these expressions that are used, so Harehu Ben Chorin, so now his Eved Kanani is going to go free. In just a moment, the Gemara is going to clarify that what we're talking about is that it's written in the Shtar, meaning the Lashonos that we just went through. We went through three different Lashonos of the Gemara. So that was written into a shtar. It's not just simply a claim that he's making, but rather it's actually documentation where in the document it's written, any one of these three lashonos. What are the common denominator of all three lashonos? Avar, it's all in the past. Meaning this is what happened, right? That the, Asisi Ploni Avdi Ben Chorin. I'm just looking at that first expression. So I made you a Ben Chorin. So that means to say that this occurred. This event occurred. So in all these examples, so then he goes free. Sarei ben Chorin, and that's a davar pasha. However, Esenu ben Chorin. But let's say the lashon of the shtar is written as follows: Esenu ben Chorin, I'm going to make you free. Now that's a funny language to put in the shtar, because in the shtar you would assume that this is a shtar shechur, which is freeing him. However, it's confusing. It's confused by the language that's used over here, which is this is something I'm going to do. Well, that's confusing. If you're writing, I'm going to do it, and you're using that as the language of the document, well, what does that mean? Well, because it's confusing, what do you think is going to happen next? It's machlokas. Rebbe Omer Kana v'chacham v'mamam lo kana. So a machlokas between Rebbe and the chacham, and whether or not this is a kinyan or it's not a kinyan. And the chacham's position, obviously, is a little bit easier to defend. Because according to the chacham, what's happening over here? What's happening over here is that I'm making a pledge. Not only am I making a pledge, I'm even writing it down. In other words, okay, good. So I'm writing Biksav that this is what I'm going to do. But when all said and done, it's just simply a promise of something I'm going to do, but it hasn't happened yet. Rebbe's position, admittedly, is a little bit more difficult to defend. According to Rebbe, what does it mean? I'm going to do this, and meanwhile, this is happening? Okay. But meanwhile, machlok is between Rebbe and the Chachamim. I'm Rav Yochanan v'kulam v'shtar, and Rav Yochanan says is that we're talking about where the Lashonos were written in the shtar. I already gave away Rav Yochanan when I explained the Braisa, but again, everyone here knows, I read ahead. I already knew that Rav Yochanan was going to make that comment. Tanur Rabbanan Homer Nasati Sa Deploni Leploni. Now over here, what we're going to do is that we're basically rinse-repeat. We're going to go over the same machlokas that we just went through, but instead of an Eved, we're going to now talk about a field. Okay? A Gemara is not going to ask the question, which it normally does, why do I need to highlight both of these cases? But meanwhile, I'm going to read quickly because it's the same thing, just with Karka. Tanur Rabbanan Homer Nasati Sa Deploni Leploni. Alternatively, Nisuna Lefloni. Alternatively, Harehi Shalo. So Harehi Shalo. So any one of those Lashonos now would indicate that this land belongs to so-and-so. I wrote that in the document. Obviously, this means that all this has already happened. It's transpired. Good. It works. However, Et Nenu Lefloni. If in the Shar I wrote, I'm going to give it to you. So once again, Rav Meir Omer, Kana V'Chachamim Omerim Lo Kana. Interesting, by the way, that in this Braisa over here, it's Rebbe Meir. Right? Previously, in the previous Braisa, we had Rebbe. And over here, it's Rebbe Meir.
The Bach
should make sense of it. Right. That's right. The Girsa that we have is a little bit strange. Noted. I'm Rav Yochanan v'kulam v'shtar. And again, Rav Yochanan makes the same comment over here as he did in the previous Braisa. And that is that these aren't just Lashonos, but rather we're talking about a shtar that was written up. V'kulam v'shtar. Tanur Rabbanan Amar Asisi Ploni Avdi Ben Chorin V'hu Amar Lo Asani. Okay, so over here, a really strange debate between owner and Eved Kanani. The owner says, Asisi Ploni Avdi Ben Chorin. You know, I freed you. And his response, V'hu Amar Lo Asani. And the Eved Kanani's response is, no, you didn't. So, Chayshin Hashem Azichalov. So over here, actually, the owner may be right. In other words, it's a funny back and forth. He said, but the owner may be right. Why? Because what he could have done is Shem Zichlo Ayidei Acher. He could have been Mezakeh. In other words, we had this discussion earlier in the Masechta, freeing your Eved Kanani. Is that a Zchus or a Zechova? If you recall, A little bit of both. Mostly a zechus. So we could say over here, not only could we say, but we actually are saying, zachon la'adam shelo b'fanav. In other words, you could free your Eved Kanani without his consent. And you just simply need another person to accept it on his behalf. And so we're going to apply the principle of zachon la'adam shelo b'fanav. So what the owner could know and the Eved Kanani could not know is that he in fact freed him. He just did so using another person, a third party. And the third party accepted the shtar shechur on his behalf, using the principle of zachon la'adam shelo b'fanav.
What is his zochov? And the slave would jump of joy. Why should he deny it?
Why should he deny it? Because as far as...
Zechus for him.
Yeah, but his denial just simply comes from virtue of the fact that he didn't know. Now, kasafti v'nasati lo v'homer lo kasav v'lo nasan li hodas baldin kemei edim dami. Now here, this is a he said, which is just simply irreconcilable. And that is that he says, I gave you the shtar shechur. That's the he, meaning the owner. And the Eved Kanani says, no, you didn't. Now over here, we're just simply at an impasse. In other words, there's no way to simply reconcile the two claims. And so therefore, who are we going to believe? Oddly enough, interestingly enough, we're going to believe the Eved Kanani. Why? Because we have the principle of hodas baldin kemeyad edim dami. When I owe you money, and I claim that I owe you money, and the other person says, if I put myself in a position of obligation, so then we believe the individual, even though he has no edim to substantiate that. Okay. Over here, I admit it's a little bit more complicated than I presented it, because hodas baldin kemei edim dami, meaning both claimants, the owner and the Eved Kanani, are both looking to lose on this transaction. Meaning what the owner is saying is, I freed you. That's a loss. What the Eved Kanani is saying is, no, you didn't. Now, that's also a loss. Meaning he could have just simply said, yes, he did, and he would have gained his freedom. But he's saying, no, you didn't. So which Hodas Baldin are we referring to over here? From the Gemara's perspective, we're referring to the Eved Kananis. Why not suggest that this, I'm just pointing out, this Gemara needs more clarification. Why don't we say that the owner's hodas baldin is just as good as the Eved Kanani's hodas baldin? Okay, that needs better understanding. I'm going to move on, but I'm acknowledging that's a tricky piece of Gemara. Homer nasati sad deponi leponi v'hu amar lo nasan li chayshin hashem azich lo ayde acher kasafti v'nasati lo v'hu amar lo kasav lo nasan li hodas baldin kemei edem dami. A rinse repeat, we just did the same thing again, but instead of an Eved Kanani, we talked about karka, like we did previously. Okay. Mi ochal peros. Rav Chista amar no sin ochal peros, Rav amar mishalshanas peros. Okay, now, when we have this hachasha, when we have this simple dispute between gift or gifty, or seller selling, okay? Let's go back. It's gift or gifty. All right. And let's go back to the case of the land, right? Where the no sin says, I gave it to you. The mekabel says, I didn't give it to you. So under those circumstances, what do we say? We say that we are at a stalemate. In other words, it's irreconcilable. Okay. However, what we do say is, hodas baldin kemei edim dami. It's just simply irreconcilable. During this period now, who's going to be able to eat the peros? So what do we have over here? We have two opinions. We have a machlokes between Rav Chista and Rabba. According to Rav Chista, the nosin eats the peros. And according to Rabba, what we do is that we put in escrow. Okay. Mishalshalas the peros. They go into escrow. They're going to go in and be held in some third party account. And until we can clarify what happened. The Gemara says, but really there's no debate over here. We're just describing two circumstances. Let's start with Abba. Okay? Abba just simply means the principal. Okay, again, what happened over here? Reuven Shimon. Reuven says, I gifted you the land. And not only that, I gave you the documentation. And Shimon says, I don't know what you're talking about. You didn't give me the documentation. Okay. So, irreconcilable. However, we have a principle that helps us understand what are we going to do with the land? Hodas baldin kemei edim dami. In other words, if Shimon now denies having received the land, so that's an admission that creates loss, and hodas baldin kemei edim dami. Fine. So that means now, from here going forward, Reuven now is going to be able to enjoy the payrus of the land. In other words, the land belongs to him. Okay. That's the Abba. Now let's go to Barah. Barah obviously here means son. Now what happens over here is the following dispute, where Reuven now, Shimon no longer alive. Reuven turns to the kids of Shimon, and Reuven says to the kids of Shimon, I gave your father the land, and I gave him the documentation. The kids of Shimon say, well, that's funny. In other words, he never told us. And on top of that, we don't have the documentation. So as far as we know, we don't think so, but of course we don't know. So over here now, this cannot not be reconciled using the principle of Hodas Baldin Kamei Edom Dami, because over here, Shimon's no longer alive. If Shimon were here and just simply refuted the facts, you didn't give me the land, you didn't give me the documentation, so then Shimon's position would be the believed position, because again, Hodas Baldin Kamei Edom Dami, but Shimon's not alive. And it's just Shimon's children. And they don't really know. Oh. So now, not only is it reconcilable, but we don't know where the land should go. And if we don't know where the land should go, well, we certainly don't know what's going to happen to the payros. That's the position. In such a situation, the payros now are going to be put in a third-party account. They're going to be put in escrow until further clarification.
Well, if you say the Chazuk and Mori Kamel, you don't know.
So yeah, but he's saying he doesn't own it anymore. He's saying that he gifted it.
He himself
is saying it. Okay. Good, Adkan, that takes us to the end of yesterday's daf. Yesterday's sugya, we are in the Mishnah on Mem Amud Beis. Evishas Rabo Apotik Ilachirim. So what happens over here? So we are going to be talking for most of today about mortgages. And so let's get comfortable with the terminology. Usually when we talk about a mortgage, so the property is Meshubun. Meshubun just simply, it means that there's a lien on that property. In other words, what happens over here is that he's borrowing money from somebody else. And he's got property, and now those properties are going to be securing the loan. That's great, and that's your standard shibud. But we're not talking about shibud today. We're talking about a potiki. Okay, so a potiki. I know, in modern legal terminology, the word a potiki is used, right? Right. The how's it pronounced?
Collateral.
The apotiki.
A guardian.
Okay, it's called a guardian. But anyway. So but a potiki over here in our Mishnah means that not only is the land going to be mortgaged and lien, but I'm pointing specifically to this particular land. This land is going to be securing the loan. Okay, now, this particular land is going to be securing the loan, and the truth of the matter is the Ritva really breaks it down to two types of a potiki. There's an a potiki stam and an a potiki mefurish. Okay, so the apotiki stam is basically the following. You see this land over here? This land is securing the loan. Now, if it's apotiki stam, I'm pointing to this land, but not to the exclusion of other properties. Okay? And so that means to say that your first recourse is going to be this land that we identified, but in the event that this land is not available anymore, it got flooded, whatever happened to it, so then what you could do is that there's going to be other avenues to collect your debt. In other words, you can go to my other properties as well. That's a potiki stam. The Ritva also points out that there's an apotiki mefurish. Apotiki mefurish means this land and only this land is going to be securing your loan. Okay? In other words, right, that when we borrow from the bank to purchase our homes, so basically we are putting a lien on our house. What kind of lien are we putting on? So to use halachic terminology, it's an apotiki mefurish. Meaning basically we say to the bank, this property and only this property is going to be used in order to secure your home. In order to secure the loan. Okay, so, without us knowing it, so we're using an apotiki. Well, I mean, we know it, but just in other words, to apply the terminology of the Mishnah, we're using an apotiki. It's an apotiki mefurish, not an apotiki stam.
Is an apotiki a receiver?
No. An apotiki is a lien, but it's a specific lien on a specific property.
Collateral. Oh, it's collateral.
And I wouldn't use the word collateral either. Wow. In other words, collateral, you're, the way I understand collateral, you're handing it over. And they're holding it. In other words, it's property that you own, but you're just simply securing it. You're securing the loan with that property. It's what we call lien. But apotiki, the terminology of apotiki means that I'm identifying which land it is that's going to be securing the loan.
So it's a mortgage.
Okay. Whatever language makes you comfortable, that's correct. So the so Evish Asa Rabba Potikila Acherim. Now over here,
Ipotek.
Okay, good. So the so over here now in our Mishnah, so you are now borrowing money, and the lender wants to know, hey, what's securing my loan? And you say, hey, I have an Evikanani. So instead of land, you're going to use your Evikanani as securing the loan. Why not? Good. So you're totally within your right to use your Evikanani. It's your property. It's chattel. So you're totally within your right to use your Evikanani to go ahead and secure the loan. That part's fine. That's good. Now, here's where the Mishnah is going to go off the rails. Because now, the Mishnah is going to create a scenario using numerous pronouns, and it's not going to be clear who we're describing. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read the Mishnah. I'm even going to translate a little bit of the Mishnah. But right now, as we go through the Mishnah, do not expect to understand the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is full of pronouns. What we're going to do then is we're going to go through the Gemara. The Gemara is going to give not one, but two different approaches of how to understand the Mishnah. Let's go. The beginning of the Mishnah is easy, as we just got done saying. Person's borrowing money, and he identifies now his Evikanani as the source to go to in the security in which the loan is going to be recouped in the event that he defaults. That part's easy. Now, Vishichraro, and then he freed him. The only pronoun we know for sure is that who got freed is the Evikanani. Who did the freeing? Let's leave that question open-ended right now. The truth of the matter is that the Eved doesn't know anything. But we're going to go beyond the strict letter of the law, and that is that we're going to appraise the Eved, and we're going to kofen es rabo. We're going to force. Step number one, we're going to force the owner to write a shtar shechur. Oso osa ben chor, and obviously now the Evikanani is going to go free. Kosev shtar al damav, we're also going to appraise his value, and he is now going to have to pay for the appraised value. Okay. Again, there's not enough information in the Mishnah so that we can properly understand what just happened over here. Please stay tuned. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Eino Kosev Ela Meshachrer. So, and Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, the only one who has to write it up, the obligation, is only the one who actually freed him. Okay. At this point in time, it's not fair. We read a Mishnah, something definitely happened, but there's not enough information in the Mishnah in order so that we know what happened. So, Evishas Rabba Apotik Evishichra Mishichra. Okay, so we're going to now ask a really simple question, and that is, who freed the Evikanani? And what we're going to get in our Gemara right now is not one, but two different approaches of how to understand the Mishnah. And here we begin approach number one. Amar Rav, Rav Arisha. Okay, now, so according to Rav, here's how to understand the Mishnah. You know who freed the Evikanani? The original owner, the borrower. The borrower who said to the lender, hey, you have nothing to worry about, because I got my Evid, and my Evid's going to secure the loan. And you know what happens when somebody says to you, you have nothing to worry about? That's exactly the point when you start to worry. And over here, the worry is going to be founded by the fact that the owner went ahead and freed his Evikanani. But that was the security for the loan. Oh, those are the breaks. So I'm a Rav Rabba Risha, and Shiro Sadin, ain't Evid Chayev Klum L'Rabba Sheni. Now, the truth of the matter is that the, what is the Evid owed to the Rabbo Sheni, to his second owner. Now we call them, second owner, what does that mean, second owner? Basically, he's not yet, but he's a lien holder. In other words, it's true now that the Eved is there securing the loan. And the truth of the matter is that upon default, the lender is going to be able to claim ownership of the Eved Kanani. Right? In other words, that's what it means to be security. In other words, I'm going to be using that as my collection, which means that I'm going to end up owning it. So, the truth of the matter is the lien holder on this Evikanani, is he able to assume ownership? The truth of the matter is, no. Why not? Because he's free, and Kidarava. So this statement of Rava we're going to hear a number of times throughout Shas, today's daf, being one of the many times that we get to hear Rava, and they say over this halacha. And that is, Kidarava damarava hektish chametz v'shichur, mafkim midei shibud. So the truth of the matter is that three different areas in halacha in which they are lien breakers, lien busters, okay? And that is hektish, chametz, and shechur, meaning that if I have something that was securing the loan and I'm makdish it, so then it no longer has a shibud. What do we say to the lien holder? Sorry. And two other areas in halacha where we say sorry. Chametz. That means to say that if, let's say, I have some, right, I borrowed money and, right, I go to my bar in my house. And I say, look, I got some expensive scotch. Let's use that to secure the loan. And then Pesach comes and all that now becomes chametz. I didn't sell it, right? In other words, and I hung on to it. So what happens to chametz on Pesach? It becomes osur behana. It was there to secure the loan. Chametz, the Isser chametz breaks the loan, and finally shechur. Shechur ever goes ahead and breaks the loan as well. How does Rava know all three of these are lien breakers, lien busters? Okay, for a different time. Right now, all we need to know are the facts. The fact of the matter is that one of the three things that just simply break a lien is going to be shechur evet. So that means as follows. Follow now carefully according to Rav. Here's what happened. And that is that I borrowed money. I turned to my evet kanani. I pointed to my evet kanani. I said, that's going to secure your loan. And then afterwards, what I then did is that I freed him. Okay. Now, what I did is not nice, clearly. It's not right. Let's say better. It's not right what I did. But I did it. I freed him. Now, is there any relationship anymore between my Eved or my past Eved, right, my ex-Eved, and the lien holder? No, because of the rule of Rava. Rava tells us that Shechur goes ahead and breaks the lien. So, Elamim Neitikin Olam Shemim Sen B'Shuk V'Yomer Lo Avdiata. So, but here's the concern. The concern is as follows. Meaning everything that we just went through is correct and halachically valid and so forth and so on. And meanwhile, you could only imagine the lender's going to see the Eved Kanani in the street and the lien holder who's going to be holding a grudge, and perfectly understandably, he's going to be holding a grudge. He's going to point to that Eved Kanani and say, that's mine. Now, what do you mean that's mine? He's a free man. Yeah, but given the circumstances, given what happened, so the Malva is just simply going to point to him and say, that's my Eved Kanani. So we want to avoid that. Rashi over here writes, interesting, Rashi, short Rashi. Right, Rashi says, "V'yomer lo avdiata v'yotzi la'az abanav." And now, what's going to happen is that the Eved Kanani's kids are in school, and you know, kids can be mean sometimes, and the kids are going to be pointing at the Eved Kanani. Again, he's no longer an Eved Kanani; he was freed. But they're going to point at his children and say, "Hey, your father's an Eved Kanani," which means that you're an Eved Kanani. And so we're worried about not only the reputation of him, but the reputation of his children. For more on this Rashi, by the way, you can see the Rabbi Kiva Eger right here on the daf, who's a little bit bothered by the way Rashi phrases it, but for our purposes right now, let's just say like Rashi. And so therefore, is there a way to clear his name? Again, if you're following carefully, his name doesn't need to be cleared. He really is a free man. But again, As far as a lender is concerned, the lender is still going to point to him and say, hey, that's my Eved Kanani. So is there a way to clean it up? So the Gemara says, yeah. So, Kofin is Rabbi Sheni Veoso So Ben Chorin. So now what we're going to go is to the Rabbi Sheni. Rabbi Sheni over here being the lender. It's a funny way to describe him, the second owner. He doesn't really own him. But again, from a perception standpoint, I think I own him. That was supposed to back my loan. And that good for nothing borrower defaulted. And not only that, the good for nothing borrower also freed my slave. So what we're going to do is the following, is that we're going to force the second owner, that's the Malva, to go ahead and to write a Shtar Shechur so that he'll never accuse the Eved Kanani of being an Eved Kanani. And now, what we're going to do is as follows. We're going to say to the Eved Kanani, look, you know how life isn't fair? So here's an example. Really, the truth of the matter is that you're a free man and you don't owe money to anybody. Your original owner freed you and the lien holder really doesn't have anything on you. But again, just to clear your name, what you're going to do now is that basically you're going to write an IOU. Now, you're not just going to write an IOU. You're actually going to owe money to the lien holder. And because he's writing you a Shtar Shechur, and basically what he's going to write you a Shtar Shechur for nothing, right? In other words, he's owed money. So what we're going to do now is that we're going to have you owe the lien holder money. I hope all that was clear. Rishim and Gamleo, Amar Ein Avid Kosev, Ela Meshachar Kosev.
I forgot to
write the Shachar Shechur,
something that he doesn't own.
It's Tikkun Olam. You're 100% correct. He doesn't owe it, but in other words, it's Tikkun Olam. It's just simply...
It's
but it's... I understand, but it's not a stranger. In other words, he thinks that he has rights to him. He thinks that he has ownership over him. He had a shibud on him. Again, in Achinami, you're 100% right. But so to avoid any kind of, you know, bad feelings that would translate to accusations. That's my Evikanani. So to avoid all that, so we say here, let's write extra paperwork. And you're right. In other words, he doesn't own him. But for Tikkun Olam and to avoid any kind of false accusations, so we're going to say you're going to write a Shtar Shechor, even though in Achinami, you're 100% right. Not unnecessary. But no more accusations. And what he's going to write Shtar Shechor for nothing? So we say to the Evikanani, and you're going to owe. I know it's not fair that you are going to owe, but to clear your name, you're going to owe. And Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer Ein Evik Kosev Elam Hashachar Kosev. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, okay, everything we just said, but the IOU note is not going to be written by the Evikanani. You know who the IOU note is going to be written by? The borrower. But and quite frankly, by the way, Rav Shimon Gamliel, if I may, I don't have an opinion on this. I'm not entitled to an opinion. But in other words, but in terms of understanding, right, I have a much easier time understanding Rav Shimon Gamliel, meaning the borrower is the one who created the mess, meaning he's the one who freed the Evikanani, where there was an apotiki on the Evikanani, and now the Malva is stuck. In other words, the Malva now got a defaulted loan. And the security that he thought he was be able to collect from no longer is available, and all this was done by the Lova. Okay.
So usually you could lien a property that's able to move by itself.
Okay.
A land doesn't move. Any kind of chattel has to be moved by a person. So right. There will be a responsibility if it's changed.
Correct. But halacha, but you know this already, halacha views an Evikanani like karka.
I understand, but it's... How do you lean something that could just pick up and walk away?
It's going to be harder to, but halacha allows for it. But I hear you. So b'may kamiflgi b'mazik shibudu shel chaver kamiflgi mar savar chayav umar savar pater. So and over here now it comes down to a halachic debate in terms of when you go ahead and you damage the shibud of somebody. So when you damage the shibud, are you going to be responsible for that loss? Meaning, are you going to have to pay the lien holder for the damages that you created? And that is the machlokus between the Tanakhama and Shimon Gamil. Tanakhama says, now by the way, the Tanakhama is not condoning. I'm sure everyone knows. Tanakhama is not saying it's okay. But in terms of financial liability, the Tanakhama will tell you that if I go ahead and damage somebody's property, but again, it's not his, he only has a lien on it, am I going to have to recoup the losses that I created? Tanakhama will say no, and Rav Shimon Gamliel will say yes. Okay.
So according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, who's going to pay the debt is still owed.
The debt is going to be owed, and the original owner now is going to have to write the IOU.
Right.
He's going to be obligated. Didn't Manami Amazik Shibud Shchavero Banan Machlokus Rav Shimon Gamliel v'Rabbanan. The Gemara says and the way that Rav understood the Machlokus, so the Gemara says it Manami. So we have whatever, it's a Masorah, it's a Memra. Good. Okay, all that was approach number one of the Mishnah. Good. Now that we understood the Mishnah one way, so what we get to do this morning is understand the Mishnah a second way as well. Ulamar Mishichro Rabo Sheni. Okay. So now we're going to have Ula's approach. So what you're going to have to do now, clear everything we just said. I admit, this is challenging. Clear everything we just said, meaning we just gave one approach of the Mishnah. It's a good approach of the Mishnah. But now clear it, because now we're going to reset. We're going to do the Mishnah again, but with an entirely different approach. And that's the approach of Ula. Ula's of the position that Mishichur Rabbasheni. So who freed the Evikanani? So the lien holder freed the Evikanani. Shir said, Denein Evid Chayev Klum V'mitzvahs. So now, is the Evid free? Of course the answer is no. The lien holder is not the owner of the Evid. In other words, the borrower is the owner of the Eved. So the truth of the matter is our Eved Kanani going to be Chayv and Mitzvos? No. Now, it's a funny statement of the Gemara, by the way. Of course the Eved Kanani is Chayv and Mitzvos. But what the Gemara, of course, means is that it's not Chayv and all the Mitzvos of the Torah, like a Ben Yisrael. So, Elam Imne Tikkun Olam Sherva Yatsa Alav Shem Ben Chorin. So, Kofin is Rabba Rishon V'Osa Oso Ben Chorin. But now, do you know what the lien holder did? So, he started rumors. I'm using the word rumors over here. It's not the best word. In other words, but he created a perception. Because, you know, the lien holder, although he's not the owner of the Evet Kenani, it's not that he's a stranger. In other words, he's one default away from becoming the owner. So when he says that this guy is free, so people will think he's not nobody. In other words, he's one step away from being the owner, and he says that the Evet Kenani is free. Now again, if we just simply look at it from a strict legal standpoint, what he said right now has no significance. But still, it creates a perception. And so you know what we're going to do now? We're going to, because of that perception, we're going to say, you know, people start to talk that he's a free man. So we're going to go to the real owner, the borrower, and we're going to say, you're going to free him. Wait. Now, the Evet Kenani is now going to have to write an IOU note to the real owner. In other words, because basically, because of the events that just unfolded, so now the real owner just lost an Evet Kenani. And so, do you have to pay for that? So, according to the Tanakhama, the Evet has to pay for that. And Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Eino Kosev Ela Meshachrer Kosev. And according to the Rashbag, the lien holder is going to have to write the note, the obligation. He's going to be in debt to the borrower. Now, I know that sounds funny. But, in other words, who created this loss? The lien holder created the loss. By saying now that the Evet Kenani is a free man. Now, by my kemiflagi, bezek, shenu nikar kemiflagi, mar sever ishmei hezek, or mar sever lo shmei hezek. And over here, what does this bring us to? A huge topic. It happens to be that we're going to be discussing this in detail right here in Gittin. Not in today's daf, although in today's daf, we're touching on the topic. But when we get to daf nun gimel, we're going to be discussing this in much greater detail. Hezek Sheino Nicker. Hezek Sheino Nicker, I'll give you one simple example of Hezek Sheino Nicker. So let's say, Alan, you are right now sitting down and you're ready to eat your truma. Okay? And I come over and I touch it and I'm not in a state of tahara, I'm in a state of tuma, I'm in tuma your truma. Right now, what I've now done is I've rendered all your truma totally inedible. Okay. Now, what I've also done is I've just taken my life into my own hands. Fine. But aside from that, in other words, let's just talk about the financial responsibility and not my reckless behavior. Am I financially obligated to pay for those damages? Now, on one hand, it would sound like, of course, meaning you are ready to sit down something that you can eat. I've rendered it inedible by touching it and making it tame. So on one hand, of course, I'm going to have to pay. On the other hand, what damage did I do? Damage in the most strict sense of, did I ruin it? Did I physically harm it?
Yes.
No. I halachically damaged it. So halachic damage, is that considered damage? I'm just giving an example, simple example.
And that being inedible.
I understand that. I'm with you. So that is what's called... Of course, that's physical damage. Good. So this is Hezek Sheino Nicker, right? We're going to be discussing this in more detail. Machlokes Tanaim, whether or not I have to pay for those damages, yes or no. Meaning it could be that from the strict legal standpoint, Hezek is only when I physically damage. And if I only create halachic damage, that's not damages. So over here, same thing. Where the lien holder will say to the borrower, look, kind of sorry for what I did. Meaning, what'd I do? I caused you a loss of your Evet Kenani. But could you tell me what the real damages is that I incurred? Exactly. This is Hezek Sheino Nicker, and whether or not you have to pay for those damages, that's going to be, according to Ula, the machlokes between the Tanakhama and the Rav Shimon Gamliel. Well, Tanakhama will tell you, Hezek Sheino Nicker. What the lien holder did was bad and not right and unethical and whatever terms you want to throw out over there. But when all said and done, did he cause physical damage? The answer is no. Because of his maneuvering, so now, the borrower lost his Evet Kenani, but I didn't cause any real damage. I don't have to pay. Masha ain't kain according to the Rav Shimon Gamliel, even though it's Hezek Sheino Nicker, you have to pay for Hezek Sheino Nicker. Okay. Ula, my time alo amakarav amalacha l'sheni rabba karislei. And now the Gemara is going to go over the usual, meaning now what we have just offered in our Mishnah is two totally different pshatim in the Mishnah in terms of who freed the Evet Kenani. Did the original owner free the Eved Kanani? Or did the Malva, the lien holder, free the Eved Kanani? So according to Rav, the former, according to Ula, the latter. But now, why didn't each of the Amorayim like the other pshat? So as far as Ula's concerned, he didn't like Rav's pshat because Amlecha, Sheni Rabu Karisle, meaning you're going to be calling the lien holder the Rav, or according to Rav, that's what you have to do. The language doesn't fit. And Rav, my time, Lo Amar Ka'ula, because Amlecha, Mishachar Karisle, and Rav doesn't like Ula's pshat because according to Ula, who freed him? The lien holder. What? The lien holder freed him? He didn't own him. How do you free somebody you don't own? So that obviously is why Rav didn't like Ula's pshat. And to put it simply, each pshat has a weakness to it, and it's just now a question of, you know, you're going to have to say a pshat in our Mishnah, something's got to give. And it's just a question of what's going to give. Itmar sade apotik al acherim, vishat vanar, amishapir nar, amar Rabbi Yochanan, enu gover, mishan nechasim. And over here now, simple question, where you made a field on a potiki. So again, a potiki is where you are mortgaging property, but you're mortgaging specifically this property. Now in a moment, I'm going to fill in, there's an important blank that I just left out of the sentence. This property to the exclusion of other properties, not to the exclusion of other properties. Hold that thought for just a moment. But meanwhile, a machlok is in terms of whether or not lender can now recoup from any of the other properties. So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Mishum Dami Shapir Nahu Amar Shmaitin Delo Shapirin. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says regarding the opinion of Ami Shapir Nahu. Now here's what I didn't explain. Ami Shapir Nahu is the name of a person. Translated, Ami the good looking. That's a funny nickname. Okay, and maybe he's good looking. Whatever. Nicknames in the Gemara, by the way, is confusing because a number of places in the Gemara it says Beferish, you're not allowed to give anybody, you're not allowed to give anyone a nickname. And meanwhile, the Gemara is replete with nicknames of people. Okay, so I admit it's a confusing topic of whether nicknames are good or bad. But meanwhile, so he's Ami the good looking and Omer Shmaitin Delo Shapirin, and he says things that are simply not attractive. Right? The statement was unattractive. And I don't want to say that. So Titagim Shmaita Damar Lalo Yelecha Paran Elazu. So when Ami Shapir says that, what happened was is that we made a land in a potiki to secure the loan, and now it got flooded, and now the borrower will say to the lender, "Look, I'm really sorry," meaning I do have other properties, but we mortgage that property, and now just to understand it a little bit better, now we can fill it in with the important missing blank of we mortgage this property to the exclusion of other properties. Meaning the lender is fully aware of the fact that at the origination of the loan, the lender will only have one recourse, and that's going to be only on one particular property. That's how it was outlined in the contract. And over here now, a braisa that spells out exactly what we just got done saying, and that is that if I go ahead and mortgage this property, but not to the exclusion of other properties, so then recourse can occur from other properties. On the other hand, if in the contract it states clearly that your only recourse is going to be from this property alone, so again, that's exactly as the contract would indicate. Tanya Idach, we have another braisa. Hosa sada apotik labachov, liksuvas isha. So, a govin mishar nechasim. So, if I make a field and a potiki, so I'm mortgaging a property either for a lender or for a wife, and it's going to secure the ksuva. So, you can go ahead and collect from other properties. Rishim and Gamliel Amr Babal Chov govin mishar nechasim isha in a gove mishar nechasim shein darker shlisha lechazer abate dinim. According to the Rashbag. So he'll tell you that when it's stam a lender, so he can go ahead and he can go and collect from other properties. However, when it comes to ksuvas isha, she cannot collect from other properties because collecting from other properties would force her to go to Beis Din and ain darka. It's just simply not the way of women to go ahead and start bouncing around from one Beis Din to another Beis Din. Okay. Yeah, okay, good. Right, so Rav Chaim over here asked, so that now under those circumstances, that puts her in a state of loss, and we learned, I wanted to gloss over this point because I wanted to just go weiter in the Mishnah, but it's a worthwhile discussion. I'm only touching it. I'm not really gonna, we learned just a couple of days ago that what we want to do is we want to make marriage attractive to women. That's called the principle of chayin. And so therefore, anytime it's going to be more difficult for a woman to collect her ksuva post-marriage, then that makes marriage less attractive. So according to the Rashbag, so what do we do with the principle of chayin? Okay. In other words, all I'm doing is just simply saying you're asking a really, really strong question. Okay. Misha chetzi wa aviv chetzi ben charen oved es rabba yom echad ves atzma yom echad divrei beis hillel. Veisham armim tekantem es rabba. Tekantem es rabba. The es atzmo lo tekantem. Lisa shivcha yefshar shekvar chetzi ben charen. En bas charen yefshar shekvar chetzi oved. So yivatel... Okay, so here we have the Mishnah. The Gemara throughout Shas quotes this Mishnah numerous times. A quick summary of the Mishnah that I just flew through. And that is that I have two owners on one Eved Kenani. In other words, they're partners. Right, each one of them has 50% shareholdings in an Eved Kenani. One frees him, and now he's a Chatzi Ben Chorin, Chatzi Eved. Okay, he's in a funny state of life where half of him is free, half of him is not free. Now, here comes the problem. In terms of employment, so what do you do? So Beis Hillel says, no problem. Right, how many days are there in a week? Six. Six working days in a week. So for three of them, he'll work for himself, and for three of them, he'll work for the 50% owner. Remaining partner. So far, so good, right? So Beit Shammai says, well, in terms of employment, that's great. What about his marriage options? He can't marry a Bas Chorin, half of him is a slave. He can't marry a Shivcha, half of him is free. And a free man, meaning a full Jewish man, is prohibited from marrying a Shivcha. Rashi says it's based on the pasuk of not to be with a Kadesha. So who can he marry? The answer is nobody. All right, so maybe just marriage is no longer going to be an option. It'll be off the table. No, that's untenable. The Torah says that there's a mitzvah peruvu. Interesting, by the way, Tosus picks up on this, that the Gemara quotes not the pasuk regarding peruvu, but the pasuk, Gemara quotes the pasuk of Loso Bara Lashevis Yitzara, which is the pasuk in Navi. And why does the Gemara quote the pasuk from Navi, not the pasuk in Chumash? He tosses over here for discussion, answers on why that is. Anyway, you can't go not marry. That's untenable. And so what we're going to do is that we're going to force the remaining shareholder to free him. Obviously, he's going to get recouped for his loss. Okay. Good. Tana Rabbanan. Let's start with the Gemara. Right? We're catching up to where we need to be. Tana Rabbanan Meshachar Chazi Abdel, Rabbi Omer Kana, V'chachamim Omrim Lo Kana. And here we go now, with a simple question of, can I free half my slave? Now, not to be confused with our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, you had two partners over one slave. Over here, we're really just dealing with even a more basic issue. It's one owner, one slave. Can I free half of him? Right? In other words, can freedom come in halves? It's really simple. What it sounds like, it's a machlokas tanaim. Amar Rabba Machlokas Bishtar, Rabbi Savar Vavdelo Niftaso Chupasal Nonitan La. So Ma Kishtar Le Kesef, Ma Kesef Ben Kulo Ben Chetzio, Afshtar Nami Ben Kulo Ben Chetzio. So Rabbi will tell you that we're going to go back to the Parsha Shifcha Charufa. What do we have over here in Shifcha Charufa? And Eved Ivri is right now married to a Shifcha Charufa. What does it mean? It means that she's not fully freed. Partially freed, not fully freed. And according to Rebbe, we have a hekesh, meaning that partial freedom came how? So Rebbe said, well, since the pasuk describes both kesef and shtar, so it could be done in either way. And Rabbanan gamre la meisha, meisha chetzialo, av evenami chetzialo, av abekesef divrakol kana paduya veina paduya. So and the chachamim will tell you, look, using the mechanism of shtar. Using the vehicle of shtar, it's all or nothing. Consider a woman that you're married to and you give her a get. Is there partial divorce? Of course not. It's all or nothing. Same thing is true regarding shichur ha'eved. It's not partial. It's all or nothing. It's binary. But when it comes to kesef, so kesef can be done in increments. So according to Rabbah, the entire machlokas of freeing half your slave is only limited to shtar. But by kesef kuleam, according to him, everyone would agree. Lema ba'ak miflagi mar savar hekesha adifa mar savar gzereshava adifa. Gemara says over here, could it be that the machlokas between, as understood by Rabba, the machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim is a question of what's the better drasha? Hekesh or gzereshava? Lo, the kuleama gzereshava adifa. So now everyone would be a gzereshava is better. Shani achadik lamifrach malisha shekein en yotze bekesef. Tamar be'evish yotze bekesef. And over here it's just now a question of, in other words, can I even make the connection between kesef and shtar? You know, when it comes to the divorce of a woman, it shtar is the only vehicle. Kesef simply doesn't work. So now that I know that, so maybe I can't make any kind of jump from kesef to shtar or from shtar to kesef. Okay. So what we have over here is a very basic machlokas regarding two partners owning an eved, one freeing him, the other one not. What to do? So eventually everyone comes around where we're going to be forcing the remaining shareholder to free him so that he can marry. Obviously, the remaining shareholder is going to be recouped. And then the Gemara started a discussion. We're going to continue tomorrow. And that is what happens when you free half of your Eved. Meaning, not like the Mishnah, you're the full owner. Can you free half your Eved? Can you free half your Shifcha? Machlok is between Rabbi and the Chachamim. And then Rabbi is saying that they're only debating regarding Shtar, not regarding Kesef. By Kesef, everyone would agree.